While the Great Flood of 93 was still far, far from over, the first signs of relent were showing up. On July 16th, Highway 65 at Chillicothe reopened, at least briefly, and many water levels began falling from their record crests, but that relent by the rivers was nothing but a mirage. The next 2 days were filled with more rain and thunderstorms. President Clinton continued his focus on the Midwest flooding as he made another trip to the area July 17th for a flood summit in Arnold, Missouri. Missouri Governor Carnahan was the first to greet Slick Willie as he stepped off of Air Force One, and Mel said he was pleased with the help being provided by the federal government, at least at that point.
There's a great effort being made to make this a response that's appropriate to the need. We won't get everybody's need just when they want it, but I think they'll know that there's someone out there trying, they're out there listening, just as the president and his secretaries were listening today.
By late July, around the 20th, the waters were beginning to recede. Very slowly and not so surely, they were beginning to pull back. With the end in sight, the focus was to shift to recovery. Governor Carnahan was heard on Larry King Live, where he reiterated his pleasure with the federal response to the Midwest struggle.
People give testimonials and they say they've never seen the federal authorities more responsive and more willing to cut through red tape and be prompt. We actually have turnaround of flood aid checks are going out to people in the St. Charles area, where we have our largest number of displaced persons. We have 10,000 people out of their homes there, and they are actually getting their checks for temporary housing, and they have been receiving those this week after applying for them last week.
As far as the dollar amount of damage assessed at that point in the Show Me State,
we were shocked that the figure was $2.7 billion that we could identify.
That's Missouri?
In Missouri alone, it was larger than the federal package. And I made that point at the flood summit that we were pleased they were out here with us. We got to make the case for magnitude, but really the bill will really need to be materially, the bill in Congress needs to be increased in size. Now, all of that is not reimbursable. We don't expect that, but it does show the perspective that the amount of loss is such that aid bill in Congress is going to need to be a lot bigger than $2.5 billion.
On July 21st, the federal government made another step toward recovery in the Midwest. Congress approved another $500 million, nearly $3 billion in assistance, most of it earmarked for farmers and their families. The bill also sent funds for the repair of dams, levees, wildlife refuges, and parks. Most area businesses that were not directly affected by the flood did their part in assisting flood victims. Many merchants used their facilities as drop-off points for cleaning supplies and other supplies needed by victims. 4 area Subway restaurants and a couple of food suppliers got together to assemble 960 foot-long Subway sandwiches that were distributed to relief efforts in flooded areas throughout Northeast Missouri. Well, it didn't take anyone long to figure out that the flood of 93 may not just be the flood of 93. It might be the flood of 93, 94, 95, and so on. Saline County farmer Dean Dyes has a 250-acre farm near the railroad levee that was washed out by the Missouri River. During one of our many Red Rover reports, Dyes told us what was left of this growing season for him.
Oh, we're through for the year, and if they don't get something done, we probably won't even get a crop in next year.
It's that serious?
Yes, we have to have the water stop before we can do anything, because you have the seep water all the time, and surface water too, and put them together, we're pretty well done until something is done about this levee.
That area at Dean Dye's land is where the Mizzou cut a 50-foot deep gap and threatened to cut a new channel for the river. The president of Gateway Western Railroad, Riley McCarron, said his crew spent $500,000 repairing a break in the line near Slater.
We've lost about another $500,000 just detouring trains, lost revenue, all the other expenses that go with being flooded. We are losing somewhere between $30,000 and $50,000 a day on a continuing basis as a result of this. We're unfortunately in the process of laying off about 100 people, many of whom are the very people who work so hard to try to prevent this from happening.
McCarron said the railroad will need serious financial help.
given the history of the railroad, the fact that we bought it out of bankruptcy, I don't think that bankruptcy offers us any real protection. A bankruptcy filing, I think, would be followed shortly by an abandonment. We've got to make it happen without resorting to that sort of extreme.
The Missouri House and Senate Appropriations Committee met on July 22nd to discuss the flood disaster in Missouri. The future of the Gateway Western was one of the topics of discussion. The summer of 93 didn't see a week go by without a wave of severe thunderstorms. On the 22nd, heavy rains again drenched north-central Missouri, almost turning catastrophic for a Knox County family. And a Edina man and his two grandchildren, plus his wife, escaped injury when their van was swept away by water east of Kirksville on that Thursday, July 22nd. 79-year-old Andrew Miller was eastbound on Highway 11, about 7 miles from Kirksville, when he noticed water over the road. Miller slammed on the brakes, slid into a drainage ditch, and was carried about 60 feet by the current. A passing motorist helped Miller, his wife, and grandchildren out of the submerged vehicle without injury. The van was towed out of the water, moderately damaged. No one was hurt. On July 23rd, Crest became an information center for flood victims. Officials from several state and federal agencies were on hand for a question and answer session with area listeners. Authorities from ASCS, SCS, FEMA, and other organizations were in our studios to take live telephone calls from concerned area flood victims. That session lasted a couple of hours. The disaster suffered by so many was sure to become a green light opportunity for con artists. The first uncovering of a major fraud effort was in Jackson County, Missouri, near Kansas City. Jackson County residents were among the least affected by the floodwaters, yet they claimed more than $1 million of the $1.5 million in emergency food stamps being distributed to Missouri flood victims. The USDA uncovered the fraudulent claims and threatened severe measures to punish false claimers. Within a short time, many of the 3,000 households in Jackson County that accepted the food stamps wrongfully turned them back in for fear of reprimand. The night of the 23rd and the morning of the 24th, Missourians endured another night of rain, thunder, and lightning, and the Weather Service was predicting nothing but more of the same weather pattern. The most recent batch of storms had finished off whatever may have been left of the 300 or more levees on the Grand River and the 500 or so Missouri River levees. On top of everything else, the Brunswick City Hall was struck by lightning that Saturday morning, the 24th. The strike disrupted radio and telephone communications at City Hall. Meanwhile, many residents and individuals were leaving the area, faced with another record prediction for a flood level on the Grand River. Brunswick Mayor Carl Schubert says their facilities were overtaxed because so many people decided to move at once.
We're getting some volunteers from Bynumville, our volunteer fire department's coming down, and I believe we've got some people from the city of Salisbury coming. So hopefully by afternoon we'll be able to start moving this list of people that we got says they need help. So hopefully we'll see a brighter day sometime.
Businesses were moving merchandise as well.
We got several of them right here on Broadway that's got trucks backed up moving out. The bank is moving out. Sam Johnson's is moving out. The lumber yard is moving out, and so on down the line. So if it gets like they say, it's going to be several feet deep in those businesses here on Broadway. And I'm not sure that it won't be in City Hall before it's all over with.
And the panic in Brunswick, in part, was much ado over nothing. The National Weather Service was wrong about the forecast crest of the Grand. The forecast was to crest at 38 feet by Wednesday of that week, but the actual forecast should have been 32.5 feet, 5.5 feet lower. You see, apparently there was a conflict between the river gauges of the Weather Service and that of the Army Corps of Engineers. Brunswick Mayor Carl Schubert added that although the 32.5 feet still meant more flooding, it did not mean the total devastation that the 38-foot prediction would have possibly meant to the city. Despite all the confusion, Schubert was thankful to the community and the surrounding area for all of the help they received in preparation for that 38-foot forecast. Well, back to Glasgow and the Harmony Bottoms area, where that Missouri River was cutting a 50-foot deep, one-quarter-mile-wide gap. Gateway Western President Riley McCarron said July 26th that the railroad was looking into building a bridge at the point where the river cut the channel through the tracks.
engineering costs of a rock fill are extraordinarily expensive, given the rapid flow of the water through there. You lose an awful lot of material, and the it's inconceivable to talk about building a dirt fill or a clay fill or using dredge material or anything like that, as long as we've got water flowing through there in the fashion that we do.
McCarron was asked if engineers were just letting the Missouri take its own course.
I don't think anybody wants to see a permanent channel there, whether it be us or anyone else. And so for the long term, some way of filling that up is going to have to be found, but it doesn't look like Mother Nature is going to cooperate in the short term.
The bridge would get Gateway Western trains running again, but would also allow the strong current to continue to flow through the area, possibly making a permanent path.
If we're going to go the bridge route, we're going to have to get going rather quickly here. Time is our enemy. The cost to detour trains, the continued loss of revenue, despite the numerous layoffs we've made, that continues to eat away at us. If we're going to do something, we're going to have to do it quickly.
McCarron also announced he was looking for political help from Congress for all railroads in Missouri. Speaking of Congress, Governor Carnahan announced plans to meet with President Clinton and congressional leaders to urge quick action on federal disaster relief for the state. At the same time, 6th District Missouri Congresswoman Pat Danner was asking the president to activate regular Army troops for aid to go along with the already active National Guard troops. In Brunswick, attention was focused on saving the school. A sandbag levee was built around the school to prevent floodwaters from entering the structure. Superintendent Bill Page says a lot of people were showing interest in saving the school.
In fact, I've had several spokesmen in the community come out and say, Dr. Page, if it originally had forecast 38 foot, and they figured that would take almost the whole town. They said, if it takes the whole town, keep the school. We got to have that, and I concur with that.
Page was asked where they were watching for the water.
We feel it's going to probably come in. We have a little creek that runs just west of the building and a drainage ditch alongside the west road, and we think it's going to come in that way and then come around from the north also.
While they were sandbagging in Brunswick, New Franklin City Clerk Pat Brush was issuing another plea for help. The sand was all gone. Immediately, other communities had to start filling sandbags in their own hometowns and bring the sand to New Franklin. On July 27th, another levee gave way, this time between Salisbury and Keatsville. The administrator at the Brunswick Senior Center, Mary Foos, was traveling Highway 24 with the National Guard when they saw the levee break.
We saw the river going over the levee banks, and it just started spreading out, and it looked like it got deeper and deeper as we were going across there. It was something to behold. I've never seen anything like this in my life, and it shows you just how powerful the water can be.
The break took most people in the area by surprise, since most of the focus had been on the Missouri and Grand Rivers in that area, not the Sheraton. In fact, Foos said she saw someone standing within a few feet of the levee when it was about to break.
I bet the water wasn't more than 12 feet away from him where it was going over, and I couldn't believe that someone would do something like that. I mean, you don't know how fast or how quickly this could overtake them, and then they would have been swept away and drowned. I just can't understand why someone would want to take that kind of risk with their life.
With the break on the Sheraton at that location, Brunswick essentially became an island. In fact, with that break, both Brunswick and Keatsville were cut off from Highway 24 traffic on the east and west sides of the cities. The Brunswick Senior Center was collecting supplies for residents displaced by the flood. Quicks Crest News broadcast the appeal for help with supplies from Vivian Ford, the shelter manager at the center.
Within an hour of the radio interview, we received a truckload of everything that I had mentioned on the radio, and the supplies just kept pouring in for at least about 3 hours after that. And the people that heard it called in. We got cash donations come in for any supplies that we may need, and we've got 16-wheeler coming from Sedalia as we speak, and we are looking forward to trying to find a place to put this stuff, because Senior Center is a little small for what we have to do, so we're looking for a storage space. If somebody has something here in Brunswick that we can get to easily, where we can store the donated items.
During a Red Rover report that same day, we had a chance to visit with a Brunswick resident who'd been there since 1931. Jake Williams said in the days before the levee system, low-lying land would get flooded regularly.
they'd come to town and bring the family and the dog and the cow and whatever they had to love. But it seemed like our town enjoyed them to a certain extent. Everybody felt sorry for them and treated them nice. It made the town full of people and children.
On July 28th, a great deal of attention was shifted to the Jefferson City area when a large propane tank ripped from its mount near the flooded Missouri River. The tank began to leak, forcing the closure of a main artery out of Jefferson City and forcing more than 400 people to flee. By mid-afternoon, police say nearly all of the gas had escaped from the 20,000-gallon tank. For the time being, that reopened Highway 54 north out of Jefferson City. It's widely known that water can put out fire, but the firefighters in New Franklin didn't expect water to put out their fire station. The Howard County Fire Protection District station at New Franklin was destroyed by the floodwaters in late July. Most of the station crew was out in the field working with sandbagging and other emergency efforts when news of the destruction was discovered. In fact, the method of discovery was as interesting as the loss of the station itself. Training officer Kerry Thompson said they didn't know that one wall of their fire station had caved in under pressure until workers miles downstream saw a couple of fire hats floating along the floodwaters. After finally getting a look at the building, Thompson assessed the situation.
As far as we know right now, it's total collapse. The water and current's just too swift to go in and make any assessment at all. But the roof was spotted yesterday about a mile from the original site of the fire station. So we know that, you know, there's been a total collapse of the structure now.
The collapse of the station didn't hamper the ability of the department to protect the city from fires because the trucks were all out of the station at work. A Dade County, Florida fire department also helped out in replenishing equipment. But the station faced a bigger problem.
Problem being is that station was looked at as down payment for the new station. So, you know, at this point, we're not sure about that, whether, you know, anybody would want to donate or any businesses would want to donate. That may become a possibility in order to make the new station a reality. We are looking, we've got the bids out for the new station, so we're speeding up the process of trying to get this new station going because, you know, we've got winter coming on, no place to house four trucks.
Keytesville had a water supply scare on July 28th. Precautionary sandbagging efforts proved to be little more than precautionary as the water never reached the main pumping station. It was July 29th when Gateway Western Railroad's financial calamity was compounded as the company's bridge across the Missouri River at Glasgow collapsed. Railroad Vice President of Engineering Paul Fetterman.
Well, this morning about 7:30, one of the piers on the west side of the bridge gave way, taking two spans with it, a 57-foot span on the west side and a 138-foot span on the east side of the pier. And we're basically out of business at this location.
The cause of the collapse?
We do not have good information in the records on what was under this pier, if you will. We suspect that the current undermined it and basically took away whatever support it had.
As that pier collapsed and the bridge collapsed, it also affected the Highway 240 bridge, which was closed for some time after the collapse of the Gateway Western Railroad facility. July 29th was also a day of near disaster for some Boonville residents. The night of July 28th, Mike and Larry Hundley, Sharon Spores, and Wayne Lammers all spent the night in floodwater, as Sheriff Randy Yeager explains.
There was four people that took off from a boat from Snotty Store about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon to video the river scene and all the flood damage that's done throughout the bottoms. They never returned. About 9:30, the family called us, very concerned about them. We called the Highway Patrol helicopter and the Water Patrol from Jeff City. A search was made. About 3 o'clock this morning, we found the people down in the flood area, and the boat was turned over and capsized, and they were found. They were taken to Cooper County Hospital.
The four suffered from hypothermia after the night in the water. And as for the boat?
Now, the current that goes down through there was very fast, and it was very rough, and the boat that they had just wasn't big enough to handle the current, and they just lost the boat.
A nightmare of a different sort in Hardin, Missouri, just west of Carroll County. The Missouri River wreaked havoc on a rural Ray County cemetery at Hardin, where gravesites were washed out by the floodwaters. Caskets floated downstream, coffins opened up, and remains were scattered. Some caskets and interments floated as far as 19 miles away when the nearby levee breached, uncovering the old cemetery. A total of 586 bodies were washed out of the old cemetery. A mass memorial service was held December 5th of this year for the remains of the hundreds of bodies disrupted. Morticians and other volunteers worked for weeks to identify the remains and prepare a mass grave for reburial. More than 150 bodies still have not been identified. The late July disasters reached the state capitol building on the 29th. Electricians had to pull the plug on the capitol building to rewire it in hopes of avoiding severe problems should still rising floodwaters reach the structure. Not far down the road, the Capitol Plaza Hotel had to be shut down and evacuated when water reached levels dangerously close to entering the Atrium Hotel built in 1987. Travel was another nightmare during the late stages of July. Getting out of Jefferson City was nearly impossible, as both Highway 54 and 63 north out of the Capitol were shut down, and Interstate 70 near Roachport was bottlenecked, backing up traffic for miles. In fact, delays of 3 or more hours in the westbound I-70 lanes prompted a rerouting of traffic more than 100 miles out of the way. Despite all of the chaos of the late days of July, the good news was coming from the Mother River. The Mississippi was starting to fall, finally. The mighty Miss had been rising since the 93 catastrophe began more than a month prior. While the Midwest would have high water around for some time to come, this was to be the turning point in a massive disaster. In Brunswick, conditions began to improve as early as July 30th. Here's Brunswick Mayor Carl Schubert.
We have had a slight decline in our river level overnight, not anything major. I just took a trip out east of town, and the water is off of U.S. 24 now as far as the James Pecan Farms as such, and in town here it has showed, I would say, somewhere an inch or two decline over the night, so that's much better than it coming up, and we feel like that once the Missouri River crest passes us by today, that hopefully over the weekend that we'll see the river go down.
Still, the floodwaters had not left the area. Eric Air Chisholm took a plane trip over flooded areas July 30th, and alongside Salisbury businessman Ralph Henke, who had a home in that Harmony Bottoms area. He described the scene over the Harmony Bottoms at Glasgow.
My son lives in that Saline Bottom. There's roughly about 5,000 or 6,000 acres total in what they call the Saline Bottom West, or the West Glasgow Bottom. And the water is about middle ways on the lower level of the house, on the first floor, about middle of the windows. All the buildings are all standing in the water. It's completely covered.
The Missouri River had reached its peak by that time at Glasgow, but it would be a few days before it began to recede. As more and more water cleared the ground, damages could be assessed. Norfolk Southern Railroad had, at the height of the flood, more than 43 miles of track covered by water. Assistant District Engineer for Norfolk and Southern, Bob Wright, tells us about the flood damage they found on the Norfolk and Southern after the water cleared.
We've got right at 20,000 feet, or approximately 4 miles, that has been washed out to different depths. Some of it as shallow as a foot or two. The deepest one we've got is a hole around Miami Station that's 65 feet deep.
The amount of rock needed to fill a 42-foot deep gap west of Brunswick was staggering.
I know we've used in excess of 20,000 tons on the projects here around Brunswick, and that's more or less what I'm familiar with.
Governor Mel Carnahan called a special flood summit at the end of the first week of August to assess Who needs what? The sorting out meeting, as it was called, gave local governments a chance to put their requests in directly to the state government, and it gave the state a chance to say, this is what you can expect to get. For the most part, the money made available by the United States Congress, while extravagant in tough times for the nation, was not going to be enough. On August 8th, the town of Brunswick began what would be a very long and unglorious process, the cleanup. Mayor Schubert called for a special cleanup day to remove the left-behind sandbags throughout the city.
We've got lots of sandbags, and we're going to ask any volunteers who would like to show up at 8 o'clock at City Hall Monday. Councilman Vic Dankert is going to head up that operation. And if we're going to have a couple, three dump trucks and some loaders, and we just need some bodies in order to take the sandbags off of the sidewalks and from around the buildings and throw them in these loaders so we can put them in the dump truck and haul them away. So we'd like to get started on Monday and see how we get along with our cleanup on the sandbags.
The Private Industry Council in Northeast Missouri took the cleanup as an opportunity to put people to work. The council signed a $200,000 contract with the Missouri Division of Job Development and Training to put people to work repairing flood damage. But wait! While the late August was a time to clean, recover, and look back, September brought more rains, storms, and rising rivers. A rehash of the floods caught some people by surprise. The sudden rehash was a natural reminder that this disaster is not something that's just going to go away. In late September, the replenished floodwaters cost a Columbia man his life. Authorities recovered the body of 80-year-old Vernon Howell about a week after his pickup truck was swept away by fast-moving high waters. The truck was swept away on a road near Boonville September 25th, and Water Patrol divers found the truck a short time later, but treacherous currents prevented them from determining if anyone was inside until the man's body was found August 2nd. Average spring's worth of rain will prompt a return of the flooding that we endured this summer. In fact, since 1951, back-to-back flood years have already happened three times. That fact scares landowners in the flood zone. With the controversy being waged between the Corps of Engineers and owners of property, the levees are just being stagnant, unrepaired. If the floodwaters return in 1994, farmers who suffered crop loss in 93 are in for nothing but more of the same. What has already been a disastrous natural phenomenon could destroy a lion's share of Missouri farmers. Officials say nearly $1 billion in crop damage alone resulted from this year's calamity, and federal aid won't be nearly enough to offset those losses. Ag Director John Saunders has already confirmed this as the worst natural disaster in Missouri agricultural history. Missouri farmers cannot withstand another round of the same thing. Strangely enough, this flood did one industry a world of good. When the floodwaters finally receded for the season, cleanup and assessment hit full stride. Scientists quickly warned the Midwest not to be surprised if this year's flood extends into future years. Experts predict that the soil throughout the region will remain waterlogged at least until next year. That leaves the rivers very susceptible to another season of massive flooding. While the river levels have gone back to normal, experts explain that's just the tip of the iceberg. Only a fraction of the moisture in the earth is represented by the water that spills out over the riverbanks. Most moisture is hidden underground, and the ground is still saturated. Some say just an average spring's worth of rain will prompt a return of the flooding that we endured this summer. In fact, since 1951, back-to-back flood years have already happened three times. That fact scares landowners in the flood zone. With the controversy being waged between the Corps of Engineers and owners of property, the levees are just sitting stagnant and unrepaired. If the floodwaters return in 1994 like they did in 93, farmers who suffered crop loss this year are in for nothing but more of the same, maybe worse. What has already been a disastrous natural phenomenon could destroy a lion's share of Missouri farmers. Officials say nearly $1 billion in crop damage alone resulted from this year's calamity, and federal aid won't be nearly enough to offset just this year's losses. Ag Director John Saunders has already confirmed this as the worst natural disaster in Missouri agricultural history. Missouri farmers cannot withstand another round of the same. Strangely enough, this flood did one industry a world of good. Barge operators say it looks like a full navigation season on the Missouri River next year. Corps of Engineers spokesman Dwayne Sveum says all the rain this summer refilled depleted upstream reservoirs, something the Corps had expected to take another 6 years. The normal navigation season of April 1st through December 1st has been cut short the last 5 years because of drought conditions. Now, 1994 may hold in store a full season of barge travel. There's a 350-year-old bur oak tree that stands in central Missouri as one measure of just how rare the flood of 93 really was. For more than 30 days, Missouri River floodwaters covered the roots of the state's oldest bur oak. The tree, located about a half mile northwest of McBain in Boone County, has stood strong for more than three centuries. But the water that rose 7 feet up the tree this year and a lightning strike during the storms that left a scar the length of the 80-foot tree have left the oak in a state of dying. It may not last through another season. Only time will tell if we can last through another season after suffering through the Great Flood of 93. For what it's worth, after seeing North Central Missourians come together and fight the greatest natural disaster in recent U.S. memory, I think we can.